This is Boston Public Radio. I am Edgar B. Herwick III. Well, back in 1963, Peter Schumann was doing what a lot of artists in New York City were doing at the time. They were responding to a very turbulent time in America, using their work to fight for causes that they believed in. So where Bob Dylan was writing, and Schumann, who is a German-born sculptor and dancer who'd been living in New York, started making puppets and baking bread and putting on shows. 50 years later, the company he founded that year, aptly called Bread and Puppet Theater, are still making puppets, still baking bread, and still fighting to change the world. In the 70s, Schumann moved the company to our northern neighbor in Vermont, and now he's brought him to Boston this weekend for a series of shows at the Cyclorama in the South End. He's with me now in the studio. Peter Schumann, founder and director of Bread and Puppet Theater, thanks for being with us.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Excellent. So I wonder if you could take us back a little bit to 1960 New York City and the beginnings of this thing. Was this something that started in response? Was there a big dramatic moment, a big dramatic thing you were responding to, or was it more organic than that?
Yes, I think it would be not fair to say it was a big dramatic thing. But, I mean, coming to New York in 61, from Germany, where I tried to do what in America was called happenings, sort of a mix and object theater that would use sculpture and paintings and so forth, not necessarily masks, but or costumes, but drapes and sticks and stones and all kind of things. And to come into, which in Germany was so isolated from culturally what went on there, that we did it, friends, but we were always like boxing against the public, just fighting. And we didn't feel there was any response to any of what we did. And then coming to New York City, I had seen Cunningham and Cage perform in Germany, and I was delighted. And I met him, and one of the first things when I came to New York was go to their studio, to Cunningham's studio, which was in the same building with the Living Theater. So I didn't only learn to know the dancers that worked with Cunningham, but also the folks who worked at the Living Theater. Immediately were very inviting. So my first activity in New York was to participate in the General Strike for Peace, it was called, that the Living Theater, together with the War Resisters League, had put on in the winter of 61-62. And, I mean, General Strike for Peace, that sounds pretty ambitious and huge, but it was a few hundred people, probably.
Yeah.
And they gave me space. So my Dance of Death, that in another form I had performed in Munich in Germany, in a new version, the dancers I found by meeting the super of my building on East 4th Street, and his friends, sort of mostly pot-smoking friends, I would think.
Drugs in New York City
and
in the 60s?
Yeah, very much so.
I see.
And they were a difficult but a very creative bunch of musicians. And didn't think of themselves as dancers, but I was able to persuade them to dance, to participate, because the dancing meant, for example, to pile up a bunch of chairs or to tear them apart or to slip under a giant piece of burlap and toss your arms through holes in the burlap and move that whole burlap bag like a piece of clay into different positions and such things.
So not traditional dance per se, but
no,
moving.
No, it had nothing to do with traditional. It was anti-dance dance, very surely.
Why? I mean, for you, I mean, in something called a General Strike for Peace, and you know, going back to the 60s, you know, obviously the Vietnam War being a big obstacle to peace at that time, something a lot of people were fighting against.
Not in 61.
Not yet,
no.
But in general, what why approach it with dance? Why approach it with art and eventually with making puppets? You guys become known over the years for these humongous puppets that you make. Why shows? Why theater?
But, you know, the why of in that form doesn't appear on the screen for the one who... You get either persuaded into it or you do it or the opportunity arises, somebody asks you from the outside... And in this case, I don't even remember. I think I went, I talked with Judith Molina and with Julian, and I talked with Cunningham, and I participated in certain things they did, choreographic exercises of sorts. And it just happened that I learned about this event, and I was immediately attracted by the event because it meant that America... I think for the first time became something like I think was new, became aware of this great danger of the nuclear business, of growing the nuclear stockpile.
Yeah.
The more and more endangering the world by that growth. And that movement was very strong at that time in England, but I don't think it had arrived in the States yet.
Yeah.
And this was the moment of opening the public's eye to that fantastic civilization event of, you know, nuclear.
Yeah. I'm talking with Peter Schumann. He's the founder and director of Bread and Puppet Theater. They're based in Vermont, have been for since the 70s. They've been working since 1963. They're in town this weekend with a couple of shows at the Cyclorama in the South End. You know, Peter, the world is very different right now than it was 50 years ago in a lot of ways. Do you feel like over this period of time, when you talk about peace, you talk about anti-war, you talk about anti-nuclear, mm-hmm. and you guys have, in your work, have been fighting political battles like those. Do you feel like over these 50 years you're fighting the same battles? Is it fundamental, or are you, you know, fighting for new things today than you were 50 years ago?
Well, the object, the adversary, seems to change faces and seems to become different over the years. But the fundamental, the word fundamental, is a good one. There is a fundamental ingredient in this fight that is pretty much similar now to what it was in the 60s. Oh. We live entrenched in a civilization that acts so terribly against its own better knowledge and its wishes and its possibilities.
How so?
Maybe I should talk in examples rather than philosophizing. I was just in an exhibit at the ICA about the 80s, and there was a little clip on a screen of Chomsky talking war in El Salvador, but not describing the horrors of the El Salvadoran war, but talking about the New York Times manner of avoiding the discussion of El Salvador in America as being sort of the truth industry's biggest representative, and the technique of making news by avoiding news, and the technique of not speaking to the real issue, instead pretending that we are supporting a fledgling, the working and all that, whereas we assisted in the murder of tens of thousands and torture of hundreds of thousands of people. So that was a good reminder of how in this so-called free country with its free, arrogantly free and proud press that pretends it can speak about anything, but it doesn't, because it avoids and it works with the technique of avoidance. And there was a particular reminder of a particular moment in time, which I remember very well, the 80s. And when you look at the exhibit of the 80s. That's now 30 years back. It's like yesterday, but it's 30 years back. it's a rare moment of political awareness in art in America. Very wonderful texts by Holzer and other people, and fantastic, rare thing in American modern art.
Political art, certainly what you were doing in the 60s, you're now talking about through the 80s, a rich time of political art in America. You know, art is one way of protesting. Protesting itself is another way. And through the 60s, it was something that I think was integral in the advancement of a lot of things, whether that's awareness about the Vietnam War or the struggle for civil rights. There were people who were taking action who were protesting. Today, we saw a protester in John Kerry's hearings. He's you know, there's hearings in the Senate
right now.
I heard
about it. Fantastic.
You know, and a protester stood up and, you know, about the Middle East is, I sort of feel like that is the exception more than the norm now. That there was times in American history where protesting was a little more visible. Is it less visible today than it was? Somebody like you who is involved in this.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so. No. Nope. Also, visibility is your job and it's the job of press and so-called free media.
Yeah.
Visibility isn't just what you're doing in the street. It's obviously not. So visibility is something that's very manipulated. And now I feel this, the Occupy movement, yes, it has become invisible again, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It's very strongly there. It's not focused on one particular issue. That's to its disadvantage, maybe. It's focused on many issues. Mm. And, I mean, we live in the northern corner of Vermont, in the northeast kingdom of Vermont, and we are surrounded by signs of occupiers, radical farmers, radical anti-civilizationists. You might call them, you know, all over the place.
You know, I wonder, you know, earlier in this conversation, you're talking about your beginnings in Germany and feeling like you were sort of isolated there with what you were trying to do.
Mm.
And yet now, like you said, you're in this sort of corner of Vermont. Like, is it a different kind of isolation there? I mean,
it isn't an isolation, no. No, the Northeast Kingdom. Well, first of all, we have created something there that attracts folks to come from all kind of directions to join these big workshop periods in the summertime where people really flock virtually from all over the world to participate. But also the Vermont, this corner of Vermont, which used to be very strictly sort of orthodox and right-wing, you might say, isn't like that at all. Or if it still is, that is very similar to what radical left-wingers want, this type of right-wing attitude. It's to see what young people in Vermont do.
What do they do?
Well, grow carrots. Amazing, huh?
Yeah.
So potatoes.
Are they good, carrots and potatoes?
Excellent. Yeah.
Excellent. So really quickly, because we've only got a few seconds left, you've got a couple of shows at the Cyclorama. What can people expect to see? Big puppets, singing, dancing?
Yeah, sure, all kind of stuff. Yeah, just come. The show is actually, it's a show in three parts. There's a exhibit part that we introduce in the beginning. Then there's an old show in the mid-60s that we are doing. And then there's a new show. And we're also doing a circus.
And a circus. How can you do? You can't do it without a circus. Perfect. All right. Bread and Puppet Theater, they're in Boston tonight through Sunday at the Cyclorama. We've got all kinds of information about that on our website, which is wgbhnews.org. Peter Sherman, founder and director of Bread and Puppet, thanks for being with us today.
Good. Now, we didn't get to talk about cheap art.
Next time.
Next time,
we'll talk about cheap art. Callie Crossley, what do you think about cheap art?
I like it.
I agree.
Thanks, Edgar. And thanks for listening to our edition of Boston Public Radio. You can find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. I'm Callie Crossley. Have a great sunny afternoon.
Miss all that wind.